You're listening to FMGradio.com.
I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. Today, I have a special Christmas program, and my first guest is Sophie Rose, who was born in France. She holds a master's degree in law, but mostly worked in marketing until 1999, when she moved to the United States. She began her spiritual quest in 1998, practiced meditation with different teachers, and quickly became an avid meditator. Sophie was contacted by Joshua and Mary Magdalene in February 2010. The Way of the Heart was dictated in 2011 in the Silence of Meditation. She is also a contributing author of The Sacred Shift, Co-Creating Your Future, an anthology featuring experts from spiritual and practical fields, due late 2011. Sophie is not aligned with any particular religion or tradition and has always favored a direct experience of spirituality. More information is available at www.thewayoftheheartcourse.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Sophie, and I look forward to hearing the spiritual message in your new book. Now tell me, Sophie, how was your new book, The Way of the Heart, written?
Well, when I look back at it, it looks like it was a long process and some kind of thread that was going on in my life for a long time. You know how things happen, and then you don't know exactly what the meaning behind it, and then years later you discover that you were supposed to do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I began to meditate in 1998
mm-hmm.
because I was interested in spirituality and I was looking for some peace. So I began to take different classes in meditation with different teachers, went to some Buddhist temples, and it really grabbed me as a big hobby.
Mm-hmm.
So I did this for years. And then 3 or 4 years ago, I began to discover that I could receive guidance
mm-hmm.
when I was meditating. That when I was sitting, going through my own, you know, meditation process, kind of, and I had a question in mind, then I was sent images, or I was hearing sentences that did not come from my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to experience with that, because mm-hmm. it was very rich in terms of wisdom. You know, it was about my spiritual practice, but also daily life situations with friends or family. It was, how would I say, wiser than mm-hmm. what my mind would have mm-hmm. thought about them. So 3 or 4 years ago, I began to sit daily
mm-hmm.
and very much enjoyed it, because meditation is really my, you know, my life path.
Mm-hmm.
And then in February of 2010, I sat as usual in meditation, and I received an image of Jesus. And he was standing in a white robe looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was my imagination, and I kind of pushed the image away. And then he came back over and over again over the next few days.
Mm-hmm.
So I began really to wonder, you know, what it was doing there, if I needed to read the Bible. At that time, I was not, and still now, I'm not a religious person.
Right.
I do not go to church. And Jesus was really, for me, associated with church and
mm-hmm.
was not my spiritual path. So I went through a lot for a few weeks. I went through a lot of, how would I say, emotions and doubts. And,
mm-hmm.
and I was angry, too, because I had a peaceful meditation practice, and here this image was coming up every time I was sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began to ask questions, and I understood that he wanted me to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't really know what to think of it. But after approximately 2 months of seeing and talking with this vision, and this voice coming that was definitely not mine, coming in my mind, I sat down with a paper and a pen, and he began to dictate. And so sentences were coming to my mind, and I did not know, you know, the beginning of a sentence was coming in my mind. I was writing it down, and I did not know what the next sentence would be or what the end of the sentence would be. So I took dictation of a book of spiritual poems for a few months, and then I met some people interested in what I was doing over the internet. And so we formed this little group that I was sending the dictations to. And after a few months, also Mary Magdalene, I had the vision of Mary Magdalene, but that was included in the dictation too. And that's how the way of the heart began to be dictated.
Very exciting. I'm like you. I don't go to church. I consider myself spiritual, but not religious. And so I meditate every day, and I believe in God and a higher being and all, but I don't go to a church.
Right. Yeah, even since I've been doing this work, I didn't feel the need to go to church. But then I can see a lot of resonance with what's written in the Bible or some church teachings. Or my children also are raised Jewish because their dad is Jewish. And I can see, you know, I think that there are universal teachings in each religion that are very similar. And so I think, and actually that's what they say in the way of the heart, you can go to church if your heart feels pulled to go to church or go to, it doesn't have, the way of the heart is not a religious book either, it's a spiritual book.
Right.
And so if you pulled toward a certain tradition, then it's wonderful, but the inner work is the most important.
Right, right.
You know, spirituality is about inner work. So going to a place of worship, but not doing the inner work won't do anything in your life, pretty much. That's what they're saying.
I agree with you that there are universal truths that run through all religions, but unfortunately, churches tend to focus on what is different instead of what is alike of all religions, because if they focused on what is alike and the universal truths, then it wouldn't matter what church we went to. We would get the same message,
right,
the same universal truths. But there seems to be a difference. You know, we're better than you because we're Catholic or we're Methodist or we're Presbyterian or whatever. And that tends to divide instead of bringing us together as one, which was Jesus's message. We're all one.
Right. Exactly. It's right. Very much about oneness.
Right.
It is all about oneness.
Right. Then, Sophie, is the way of the heart a new spiritual concept?
No, actually it is, and that's what you were saying about the church, you know, the religions teaching something different. I think at the core of each religion we can find, you know, mystical side of each religion, we can find the same concepts or the same ideas. And the way of the heart is a very ancient teaching. I think you can find it in many different mystical traditions or, you know, old spiritual teachings, and it's a teaching that's based on experience, not on ideas or concept. They speak about it in the book, saying that each lesson should be taken at your own pace, and you should reflect on it, and you should experience it, which means that not make it through your mind, but really experience it in your life, because God and spirituality is an experience. So it's not a new spiritual concept, and they refer to it in the course as the path of the initiate, meaning the person who wants to commit to discovering God for himself in his life, which is something that requires also a lot of discipline. But in terms of soul evolution, which is something that everybody needs to do.
Now, Sophie, what does practicing the way of the heart mean, and why would people want to do that?
Well, practicing the way of the heart means retraining yourself about the experience of the world. It is actually more of a let go than a training. There are many experiences that they ask you to practice in the mm-hmm. book, but it's based on the concept, which is actually not a concept, that right now most of people drive their life based on their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the mind is separating function.
Mm-hmm.
And you should not drive your life with your mind, but you should drive it with your heart or soul,
mm-hmm.
which is the real driver behind your life.
Mm-hmm.
Within your soul is the intentions that you put forward for this lifetime. And so that's your soul, and that's your spiritual dimension, that's your part of God or your divine connection, however, or that's God within yourself, whatever you put behind this, you know, it doesn't matter, these are just words, but whatever you put behind this dimension, that carries your real purpose in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if you access this purpose, then you're doing the real work you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way of the heart is about reconnecting with that, with this dimension in your life, so that you can live a life of joy, you know, purposeful, and the mind becoming the tool and not the driver, becoming the tool for your soul or for your heart
mm-hmm.
In this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So people who want to stop suffering, whatever that means, if it's like about unhappiness, anxiety, or any other form of suffering, may want to practice the way of the heart, because there is a lot of unhappiness actually comes from the mind, and the way of the heart has a lot of teachings in it about letting go of the mind and about retraining your mind in such a way that it becomes a tool and you're not slave to it.
Mm-hmm.
And people, of course, who want to uncover their soul purpose,
mm-hmm.
the goal of the course being to experience this part of yourself, which is God or oneness,
mm-hmm.
to know what you're here for and, you know, what you're supposed to do in this lifetime. So it's not religious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is really about discovering that the kingdom of heaven is within you
mm-hmm.
and not outside you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is a teaching also that you can find in other traditions, like in Buddhism, they say that the Buddha nature is everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I did a series on the ascension of 2012 earlier this year, and one of the people that I spoke with channels through, and she does automatic writing, I believe, and she has written a book. I can't remember the name of the book, but the gist of the whole book is that we have been an outer-directed society, and we're moving to an inner-directed, so that instead of looking without for our answers, we look within. And
right,
I think that's what you're also saying. Am I correct?
Yes, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. That there is an urgency to look within, because that's where all the wisdom and knowledge is.
Mm-hmm.
Your soul, your divine part knows everything there is to know,
mm-hmm.
everything that you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the way of the heart is about, is to access this source of wisdom and knowledge, which is, you know, which you can call God.
And does the book then facilitate that process?
Yes, the book facilitates that process through 36 lessons. And it's not a book that you can read mm-hmm. in one sitting or even in two sittings. It's a book where, and that's how they present it in the foreword,
mm-hmm.
it's a book where you read one lesson and also the question and answers from the audience, which are very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You read one lesson and then you let it sit within
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Or you sometimes there are things to practice. You practice it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back to the book when you feel that you've done enough practice around mm-hmm. the lesson, or you understood the lesson enough.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say there's 36, and I read that somewhere else, but when I looked at the book, I found 33. So I don't know.
Trained, do I say field testing?
I think, and that's what I had read somewhere else was that there were 36, but let me see, I've got the book right here, and it ends at 33, yeah.
Right, yeah, the way of the heart in itself is 33.
Yeah, so Sophie, there's then the 33 lessons for the reader, and can you tell us a little bit about some of those lessons?
Yeah, well, there are many lessons. I don't know what to tell you. There are some lessons that are about the nature of reality, which is considered as an illusion, meaning that they say that everything is oneness or God, and that through our mind and through the interpretation of our mind and putting our attention on things, that's how we create separation.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal of the lesson is kind of to undo this process so that we can get more oneness in our life.
Mm-hmm.
There are some lessons on the divine feminine, some lessons on forgiveness, lots of teachings on presence, being in the present moment and not in the past or the future. What else is there? Let's see. Some lessons on, you know, religion and the fact that the world does not need religions, but it needs to uncover God, that it doesn't need, like, rules, but it needs compassion. Some lessons on how to stick with the discipline required to access your soul's intentions or to access God or the divine. So lots of different lessons like that.
Right. Yeah, I like that. Sophie, some lessons refer to the importance of action and being engaged in the world. How do you reconcile this with spirituality?
Well, spirituality is about connecting to your divine part, which is your soul, and your soul being the real driver behind your life.
Mm-hmm.
It also carries your intentions behind coming on this planet, in this lifetime, behind your incarnation. And these intentions or these goals that, or this purpose, involves other people. And so action and engagement are very much part of the work. Once you access your soul's intention, it's not about being on an island, but there is a lot of service to others. Usually is a big part of it, whether others are your listeners or your children, but there is, within the soul contract you have, other people are involved. So spirituality is also about connecting with oneness, and once you connect with oneness, and once you see that there is no difference between you and others, then there is a strong desire for action. And, you know, being of service and helping the world situation. So it's really about, some people see spirituality as sitting on a cushion. That's not what it is, in fact. Sitting on the cushion and accessing your divine part and your divine intuition is a good thing, but then you need to do something with it and get in action with it. Because you're co-creator of this world, and you create from your higher self. Does it make sense?
Sometimes I think people do create from their lower self, and then they have all kinds of problems, and then they wonder why.
Yes, I totally agree with you. They create from their mind. They do not create from their heart or their intuition, and so it doesn't, it doesn't work out. Yes, it's about, I can read also something, because I read the description of your show, I can read something that is not in the way of the heart, but that was dictated prior to that, about health and illness. And he's saying, that's Yeshua saying, health and illness are a question of balance, a balanced life where your heart is the leader of your mind. Illness is a reflection of your soul's need for evolution. Whether you are healthy or sick, health is a learning experience. The trilogy mind, body, spirit is the old holder of a balance. Your mind must be stable and quiet, your body peaceful, and the spirit must lead the show. The balance is very fragile. It requires love and discipline. Illness is the point of tipping. Environment is a factor. It puts your body in danger. Toxins are getting in the way of light's connection in body. Fear is a threat to the mind's game. It makes it fabricate worry, which will come down on the body as soon as mind is getting tired. So that's what came, you know, a few months before. The way of the heart was dictated.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it speaks about environment also, as well as the book does, and the urgency to take care of the earth and not to destroy our environment as we are doing right now.
Right, right. And
the impact of it on our bodies. The fear that it's actually a mind creation. That's another lesson in the way of the heart. The choice between fear and love. And the need to be, of course, in love. And as soon as you are in mind, you are in fear. So you cannot discover God by staying in mind, because it means also staying in fear.
Sophie, can you say anything more about the concept of connecting with our soul, since that seemed to be a very important lesson?
Yeah, it's the whole book, actually. It's the whole book. Well, it's important right now, because it's important to connect with our soul, because we are going through a big transition. I mean, if you look at the economy that's going under, the gap between the rich and the poor, and I'm not speaking only in the United States, even worse worldwide, you know, it is widening. The planet is suffering. We're not taking care of our environment well. So at every level, little level, or big level, we are going through a huge transition. And so if we continue to deal with this transition like we've been dealing with it for centuries, which means using our mind and putting up solutions that will work for a little bit, or dealing kind of with what's going on right now but without having a longer vision, or if we continue to be in a pattern of separation at the global level, then we might take care of a few things and might go through a transition, but then things won't improve. See what I mean? I don't think it will be a transition for the best. So the importance of connecting with your soul is that your soul's intentions are part of a divine plan. There is a divine plan for everyone, and everyone has his own part to do through this purpose that was decided before your lifetime. And as everyone works toward this purpose, then they work toward God's purpose, which is the kingdom of heaven on earth, whichever that means. I have no idea what that means, you know, ultimately. But that's the plan. So that's why it's extremely important to connect with your soul. And connecting with your soul goes through a lot of discipline in daily life that has to do with practicing presence, trying to let go of fear, which is very difficult, especially right now, as people are going through a lot of transition. Developing trust in the work, not doubting that you're going the wrong way, not doubting your intuition, working on your intuition, knowing when, and it takes a lot of work also to know what comes from your mind and what comes from your intuition. And there are a few exercises in the book about that. And they say also that it doesn't have to, the spiritual practice can vary for everyone. Some people can work through it with meditation, but some other people can work with dance or with any activity that puts you in a space where you forget about your mind and you feel connected to something bigger. So for some people, like in the audience, that were in the audience of my book, they were talking about their painting that was putting them into this space of connection when the mind is not involved and when you're really relaxed and then you begin to hear your intuition talking. You know, when, I mean, you meditate, so I guess you must have these experiences sometimes where you're in a state of kind of no mind or very relaxed, and you get this great idea, or you get, oh, gee, why don't I do that?
Right.
So the way of the heart is about that, is connecting with, through your heart, connecting with your soul. And it has a lot to do with following the guidance.
Do Jesus and Mary still appear?
Yes, I'm writing the second book where they take each lesson of the way of the heart and they develop it. So every day I'm sitting for 45 minutes to an hour and I'm taking dictation.
And when do you anticipate that book will be out?
You know, I don't know.
Oh, you don't know?
I don't know, probably in 6 months to a year, I guess.
And do you have a title?
No, not yet. I have a website, though, that's called thewayoftheheartcourse.com, and I'm available to answer questions on this website via the blog. I also have written an article that you can find on by Googling Sophie Rose on spiritual practice. This is an article on the importance of spiritual practice. And I feel that I might have some other articles coming up.
Is there anything else then, Sophie, that you would like to say and then also give us your website again so that the listeners can reach you and also locate your book and maybe give us the title of your book again?
So the book is called The Way of the Heart, Teachings of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, and it's available on Amazon. And the website is thewayoftheheartcourse.com, and there is a place to leave comments and questions. I love, you know, to hear what people have to say on it.
Well, I appreciate this very much, Sophie. It's been very interesting, and I wanted something for my Christmas show that related to Jesus and that would be inspirational for the people listening, and I think this has done it. So I thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Thank you. I invite you to join me in reading the new fall issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. This issue, like the fall issue last year, focuses on inspirational cancer stories. Several children with leukemia were included, and one I especially liked was Christopher, age 9, who was described by his friends as the type of friend everyone would want: smart, loyal, brave, funny, and always a good sport. He was diagnosed with leukemia at age 3 and had a recurrence at age 8. Unfortunately, Christopher died. It is always a pleasure for me to read about Fran Dressler and Sharon Winters, who were also included in last year's fall issue. Fran has been cancer-free for 11 years and wrote Cancer Smancer about her survival. She also started the Cancer Smancer Movement and Foundation that emphasizes preventing cancer. Sharon Winters, another long-term cancer survivor, talked about the influence of the environment on cancer development and how to prevent it using information from her book, co-authored with Burton Goldberg, titled Survival A Family Guide for Thriving in a Toxic World. For me, this book was the most comprehensive guide currently available. I was also interviewed for this issue, and you will find more about my story that is being published in a book on surviving lung cancer that will be available for purchase next year. Beyond the many interesting stories of cancer survivors and sufferers, I was interested in information on Farmageddon, about the war on American family farms, and another on local food movements, both which resonated with me. Also of interest was the interview with Peter Shankman, who is the founder of HIRO, Help a Reporter Out, the world's largest free source repertory. If you are looking for speakers, guests, for radio shows, conference, or whatever, or if interested in being considered as a speaker, guest, this is the place to be. I have used the service and am very pleased with the results obtained. And last, a mention of the music of 2-time Grammy Award winner Jemmy Warnes. You will not want to miss these and other stories in the fall issue of A Distinctive Style magazine, available at www.adistinctivestyle.com. My second guest is Jackie Jones Hunt, PhD, who has spent the most part of her life in Glasgow, Scotland, where she now lives with her husband and 2 Jack Daniels, not far from the Edinburgh home of the famous author J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter fame. Jackie initially studied, researched Arabic and Islamic studies, religious studies, with some archaeology, moving on to the area of consciousness studies and sacred traditions. She wrote 2 100,000-word Masters of Philosophy and PhD dissertation on 3 classes of spiritually transformative psychic experiences. These are first, shamanic, out-of-body, and near-death experiences, and second, an exploration of the relationship between the psychic faculty and the spiritual. Jackie has research qualifications from a number of universities, including the University of Lancaster in England, the University of Strathclyde in Glasgow, and the University of Wales, where she transferred to a new supervisor who is one of the world's leading authorities on near-death experience, Reverend Dr. Dean Elizabeth W. Fenske. Fenske was the president of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, based in Durham, the United States, and editor of Vital Signs, the International Association of Near-Death Experiences Journal. Fenske was founder and president of the Spiritual Frontiers Fellowship, Incorporated, based in Pennsylvania, USA, and director of the Academy of Spirituality and Psychonormal Studies, Incorporated, based in Connecticut, USA. Jackie's author of the new book, Jesus and Moses, the Shaman. More information is available at www.jackiejoneshunt.co.uk. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Jackie, and I look forward to hearing about Jesus, Moses, and others as shaman. First, would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and your background?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I believe the best way to describe myself is a long-standing vegetarian, a historian of religious teachings. I'm passionately interested in religious archaeology, and I'm also very much an academic, yet also a psychical researcher. I use all of these areas to help me to delve into the unknown. As a person who's studied the birth and development of religions, I believe I've discovered the authentic, undistorted teachings and practices of many of the world's greatest spiritual teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I found many of them to be practicing mediums or have mediumistic gifts, and I can clarify this later.
Mm-hmm.
As a psychical researcher, I've spent decades observing trance,
and physical phenomena mediumship, seeing spirit, and listening to their profound spirit conversations and spiritual insights. Regarding my interest in religious archaeology, I've travelled in the Middle East quite extensively, particularly Egypt, Israel, Syria, and Jordan. I also lived in Amman, Jordan for several years so that I could study the different places of archaeological and religious interest.
Mm-hmm. Then, Jackie, would you tell us a little bit about some of the psychic and mediumistic things you have observed?
Sure, yes. I've had the privilege to watch some fantastic things that assure me that life continues after physical death for all sentient beings. I'm firmly convinced that all survive physical death and each make their transition to a different frequency of existence at death. One of the most enduring mediumistic phenomena I've witnessed was demonstrated by Gordon Higginson. Gordon was the president for many years of the Arthur Findlay College in Stansted, England. This wonderful stately home was donated for the training of and experiments with mediums by the author, Arthur Findlay. As one of a small group invited to what we call the AFC, to observe the physical phenomena, and in this case it was to be spirits manifesting. In preparation for 2 days, Gordon Higginson ate very little, and on the November evening, we gathered in the library of this magnificent mansion. We were told we could not bring in cameras or tape recorders, as the tiniest click would be damaging to the medium. We were informed that the last time a click was heard, the ectoplasm building up the spirit manifestation dropped to the floor. Some rolled along the carpet and returned to Gordon's navel area and burned his skin. Gordon had been taken to the local hospital where he told them his hot water bottle had burst. Getting back to the materialization, in the darkened room, Gordon was wearing only a white dressing gown. This was checked by one of the men, and the room was checked thoroughly beforehand by everyone. As time passed, Gordon went deeper and deeper into trance, and his spirit guide spoke through him. Later, ectoplasm, which has been weighed in the past by psychical researchers, poured from his nose and navel and built up into a young man. This spirit man spoke, telling us he had drowned on the ship which is known in the UK as the Zeebrugge disaster. This spirit man spoke to his mother, who happened to be sitting in our group. It became clear his purpose was to console her. He was very concerned he had been around her and she could not see him, and he was determined to stop her making herself very ill with grief.
Mm-hmm.
He told her that one good thing for him and his fiancée is that they made their transitions together and are still together, though he was very sad to have gone. And the young man's emotion and his mother's, the communications finally, and this fantastic materialization disappeared. This was such a spiritual moment, there was not a dry eye in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd each been told we were there for a reason for the work we would do later in life. The second one was an amazing experiment I watched concerning Mary Duffy from Edinburgh, Scotland, who was a clairaudient medium. This means she could clearly hear spirit voices. The other medium involved was Coral Polge, and she's a wonderfully gifted and accurate psychic artist. The experiment was to demonstrate that a link with spirit is an objective thing that one or more mediums could access simultaneously. It was a public demonstration. Coral began drawing an old lady on her board on the stage, and soon after, Mary began describing the personality and the lifestyle of this lady. Finally, Mary spoke to a woman in the audience and said, "You know this old woman and can accept all the information we have given you, yet you haven't put your hand up to acknowledge it." The startled woman in the audience said she had never been to anything like this before. She'd never believed in it, that she did know the old woman, but significantly she was not dead, but had been in a coma for several years, though doctors believed she would never come out of it.
Now, would you give us some of your own personal psychic and mediumistic experiences?
Okay. Yes, I would love to, but I'm not sure where to begin because there's lots to choose from, as I started having psychic and mediumistic experiences when I was a young child. But here's the first one that I would like to recount.
Mm-hmm.
My female Jack Russell, Jack, because my name is Jackie, she is Jack, J-A-C, had recently passed to spirit, cuddling in my arms as we both looked out of the window of our living room. Soon after, in my sleep state, I was getting onto a steam train at dusk. I waved goodbye to Tony, my husband, and a friend who was staying with us at the time for a few days. As I stepped into the doorway of the train, telepathically a male voice told me it was a one-way journey, a journey we all make when the time is right. Thinking of Tony, I quickly stepped off the train. I woke up in tears, telling him I had just had the choice to live or pass to spirit. This experience convinced me that a minor operation due in a couple of days was going to go wrong, and I would face death. My husband, who's a doctor, tried to reassure me, telling me he did not think anything could go wrong with it being such a very minor surgery. The night before the minor procedure, I was white as a sheet. I gained the deepest empathy for all those tragic individuals who'd gone to their deaths at the guillotine, because I felt I was one of them. I packed a wee overnight bag, as I knew I would not be leaving the hospital in a couple of hours, as I'd been told. I asked for a full anaesthetic, as I did not want my fear to prejudice my chances. When they woke me, I was in agony. The anaesthetist was called over to give me pain-killing injections. When wheeled to the ward, my husband was waiting, and we asked for more pain relief. Moments later, my head fell back, my eyes closed, and all my vital signs had ceased. I was dead. My husband resuscitated me, realizing I was hemorrhaging and I did lose about 6 units of blood. That night in my hospital room, I couldn't breathe. A kindly, calm, male spirit voice told me that fluid was going onto my lungs, and if I try to sit up, it will clear. As I sat up, it did clear. And I became aware of Jack, my spirit dog, lying across my right calf. I could feel the weight and the warmth of her body and her fur. The next day, doctors informed me that potentially fatal blood clots were going on my lungs and that I was developing a deep vein thrombosis in my right calf. I believe Jack, my dog, who had passed to spirit, was lying on this calf offering me healing, as they noticed it cleared really as soon as it had appeared. During the night at home, sometime later in my sleep state, I couldn't breathe. In this sleep state, I was driving my car to old Sally, a medium, who I didn't know very well. And in this state, I discovered I could not drive anymore as I couldn't breathe. So I opened the car door, but still couldn't breathe. This is all still in my sleep state. In panic, I repeatedly shouted, "Tony, Tony, help!" Tony, my husband, woke up to find me lying next to him in bed, unconscious and not breathing. So obviously a further blood clot had gone on my lungs, but it was amazing that he'd heard me when I'm saying it in my unconscious state and not actually physically speaking at all. And at the Spiritualist Church sometime later, which is in Devon in England, a visiting medium told me to leave the church in peace, not in pieces. She told me I'd been very ill and she wanted to confirm to me that the many experiences of spirit I had had during that illness were not imagined. By chance, I bumped into Sally, the medium, in the church, and I told her about my experience. And she said the night I was traveling to her for help in my sleep state was in fact the night that she ran a healing meditation circle. So on some level, I must have been drawn perhaps to a healing light that her group was giving off. And Sally was not a person I saw very often, and I had no idea at all that she actually had a healing group. Okay.
What are your conclusions then as a psychical researcher based upon your observations of others and your own experiences?
Well, I believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that animals, human and non-human, survive physical death. I believe we all make our transitions at death to the next level of continued consciousness, continued existence. I firmly believe each of us is a recognizable consciousness, a recognizable intelligence or personality. I have a friend in Brazil. She's written a number of books on what's called EVP, Electronic Voice Phenomena, or Instrumental Transcommunication Research, ITC, and she has many spirit voices of animals, particularly those of dogs. Mediums through the ages and children blind from birth verify the existence of a non-physical after-death dimension. And near-death experiences recount their near-death experiences, clearly describing events they witnessed in their homes, geographic distances away from their inert body, which lies in the morgue. And at the hospital, they see uncles and aunts in this spirit dimension who they did not know, but maybe recognize later from photographs. I became a vegetarian many years ago, as I want no part in the cruelty that befalls animals, because as flesh and blood beings like us, they feel pain, they dream, and they fear death. Killing machines know no mercy, and they go on to spirit like us, and I want no part in harming them. Mm-hmm. And in more recent years, I've learned that there are incredible health benefits from being a vegetarian.
Right, right. Now, Jackie, would you tell us about your book, Moses and Jesus as Shaman?
Yes. I show in my book that spiritually transformative mediumistic experiences are at the root and source of spiritual knowledge, which has become institutionalized into man-made religions today.
Mm-hmm.
My book outlines my research revealing that Jesus was a spiritual shaman, a deeply spiritually evolved individual, and a gifted psychic and medium. Jesus was not alone in his spiritual shamanism. He shared a place among many of the world's other highly respected spiritual leaders, such as Moses. In my book, I clarify textual mistranslations in the Bible, some through ignorance and others that deliberately distort our understanding of the lives and mediumistic practices of a number of the world's mediumistic forebears. I believe my book proves that many of the world's famous spiritual teachers had mediumistic spiritual gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the authentic prophetic lies that are discussed include detailed proof of the spiritual mediumistic practices of a number of the world's famous religious leaders and founders of religions, some of whom include Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, the biblical judges, Samuel, King Saul, King David, Ezekiel, and Jesus. I feel the results of my research are exciting and revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
My book delivers an astounding shock to rigid religious orthodoxy, which has lost touch with its spiritually transformative mediumistic roots,
mm-hmm.
claiming that all mediumship is the work of the devil. My factual research reveals that many eminent global spiritual leaders, known as prophets, were in fact spiritual mediums, channels, chosen and guided by non-physical, spiritually elevated communicators, namely spirits and angels.
Mm-hmm.
These results came to light due to the culmination of my unique blend of religious, historical, archaeological, and psychical research into little chartered territories. I could give examples of mediums from the earliest times throughout the centuries and the world. I talk of Moses speaking to Yahweh in the Ark of the Covenant. Elders stood with Moses, and all saw and heard this communicator. Moses' face shone for days afterwards. The people finally asked not to see the communicator anymore. They also followed Yahweh as a materialized cloud which raised itself up daily and stopped every night when they were traveling in the wilderness. I talk of Jesus, who, as a psychic, gave a number of predictions. Jesus was also certainly a spiritual healer. Jesus demonstrated his mediumship when he spoke to the spirits of the long-since dead Moses and Elijah at the event known as the Transfiguration on the Mount.
Mm-hmm.
This was prior to Jesus' own transition to spirit. Jesus proved life continues after physical death for all by taking a few of his more mediumistic disciples with him up the mountain. They helped to facilitate the physical manifestation of these supportive spirits. Importantly, Jesus initiated this materialization in order to reassure his disciples that life continues after death for all, before his own passing to spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I give Old and New Testament biblical examples of predictions, the use of trance, the use of dreams as psychic tools, the appearance of non-physical messengers, ESP, precognition, and clairvoyance,
mm-hmm.
which is seeing spirits and angels.
Mm-hmm.
I discuss mediums throughout the centuries and in the many countries of the globe, leading up to people such as Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon Church in the mm-hmm. 19th century. He was an American medium who founded a religious movement based upon the spiritual information he first received in New York, and the angel was named Moroni. I discuss Emanuel Swedenborg. He was a medium to the European governments and royalty. He performed soul journeys to the non-physical planes to retrieve information, to answer their questions, and in order to describe the many non-physical landscapes in which like attracts like.
Will you tell us then, Jackie, how the listeners can locate your book?
Yes, Amazon are selling my book, but they can also go to my website where my office will pick it up, and they can pay for it on PayPal at a slightly reduced price to Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to include the postage, but it's still reduced to the price that Amazon are charging.
Mm-hmm.
And my website is jackiejoneshunt.co.uk, which is J-A-C-K-I-E-J-O-N-E-S, Hunt, H-U-N-T, .co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
And if they would like to just, my email is there as well, and if they'd like to just contact me or pay through PayPal, then mm-hmm. a book would be sent off to them.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Jackie. It's been very interesting, and it gives a different perspective on Jesus and Moses and many other people that are discussed in the Bible.
Yes.
So I thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. This concludes the special Christmas interviews, and the following will be an interview on the Ascension of 2012 for the New Year's. Then we will start on a series on wellness. The first topics of the series will be on dreams and dream analysis, which is one that I always enjoy. I invite you to my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you'll find all of the past shows back to 2008. Categories of series and dates are identified on a link on the left side of the home page. You can listen to any that sound interesting to you. You will also find these on iTunes, Podcast Pickle, and Podcast Alley. You can also sign up to have the shows emailed to you for free. If interested, you can also sign up for a free monthly emailed newsletter on healthy holistic aging. Under the shopping link, you will find some ebooks for sale and one CD on smoking cessation. You will also find my last book published in 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging. My next book on alternative treatments for lung cancer is in press and will be available next summer. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a happy holiday and a great week ahead.